This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Violent crime is down overall in Cincinnati, but youth violence remains a problem. The city had a record number of teen shootings last year and has seen violent attacks involving teens this year. Cincinnati's police chief has said law enforcement can't solve this problem alone, and Cincinnati Public School Superintendent says educators can't either. Today, we're going to talk about the broader community efforts to address the problem. Joining me to do that are Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Ironetta Wright. Welcome back, Superintendent Wright.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Cincinnati Police Chief Teresa Thiege. Thanks for being here, Chief Thiege.
Happy to be here, Lucy. Thank you.
Cincinnati Public Schools is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Chief, violent crime is down overall in Cincinnati, as I mentioned, but there's been this concerning amount of youth violence. Describe what's been happening.
Yeah, so, you know, we kind of categorize it two ways. One is violence around guns, shootings, juveniles being shot, juveniles being the shooters, but then also the any kind of violent crime such as assaults or robberies, particularly in our downtown business area, that we have been working on strategies to alleviate that activity.
Mm-hmm. And I know there have been a number of attacks involving teens. Can you just tell us a little bit about those and what the victims have told you about, you know, what they experienced?
Yeah, so I think of what really heightened our attention to this was the activity that we started seeing late January. While we've always had the activity of a lot of students, youth being downtown after the school hours, what we started seeing in January were some assaults, some robberies, where the officers had to intervene and do an investigation and ultimately make arrests. Those are now making their way through the court systems. But yeah, the people want to feel safe in their community, no matter what part of the city of Cincinnati you live in. But when something like this starts to happen in our downtown core business district, that heightens everybody's alert for good cause. And so we started strategizing and putting additional police resources down there to alleviate that activity and hopefully bring a sense of calm to individuals.
And does this seem different from what you've seen in the past? I mean, you've been with the Cincinnati Police Department for quite a while.
Yeah, it actually is. There is more of a sense that the kids just don't care about consequences. They don't care who they victimize. And it used to be it was a dispute between individuals. But now sometimes we see where it's just a random attack, random activity. Not sure exactly why, but more of a random than targeted.
Yeah. And what kinds of injuries are people coming away with? I mean, are these? It sounds like these have gotten kind of serious in some cases.
Yeah, so we are very fortunate that most of the victims have not sustained serious physical harm, but harm nonetheless.
Sure. Yeah. Superintendent Wright, what do you see as the school district's role in addressing this problem? We're going to talk about how Chief Thiege, in February, you said, hey, let's all come together. The police department can't do this alone. Superintendent Wright, where do you think the school district comes into play here?
I think the school district has to be a partner and a thought partner in what we do as we interact with our students. So right now, a lot of our students go through downtown in order to catch the bus back and forth. And so it's important that we are communicating with our children, but also with the parents about the expectation. You know, we provide transportation for students. They catch Metro. Many of them are transferring downtown. If it is not for the Metro transportation, they don't have a way to get to school. But their bus pass is expressly for them to have direction and transportation from their home to school and back. And what we're finding is there are students that there are other things that they could do, but they choose to stay downtown. They choose to hang out where other students are or other children are, And that's where we see some of the challenges. So for us, it's really been about continuing to communicate with families, looking at and really being more specific as we've had more constant communication with the police department and with information that we're receiving so that all of us are aware of what's happening. And so then we're also able to follow up. So, you know, we're communicating with principals, we're communicating with families around the type of incidences that we're seeing. And we are poised, and we shared with families that we are poised to revoke students' bus passes as well. And, you know, not only are there disciplinary consequences, but that it's a pretty significant consequence as well if a student cannot have a bus pass and that's the only means that they have to get to school. So
it's
not one of the things that we want to do, but we also want to make sure that our community is safe, mm-hmm. and that if there are students that are, their acts are egregious, that we're doing what we need to do as a school district to support our collective process.
Yeah. Chief Thiges, I mentioned in February you called on city and community leaders to really work together. You said, hey, law enforcement can't do this alone. Tell us more about what you meant by that, and then what some of the things are that have happened since then to really kind of address this problem.
Sure. So, you know, I think when an activity like this occurs, the first instinct people have is to look to the police for a solution. And I understand that. We are the first line of a solution, but we should not be the only part of a solution. So you're right. I called a couple of meetings. The Cincinnati Public School Superintendent was there. Queen City Metro has been a good partner through this brainstorming, was there. I also had another meeting where the juvenile courts, prosecutor's office, because they are all part of this equation. You know, it's not just about preventing it, but it's when the activity does happen and then they end up in the court system, what is being done there? So we had all these meetings, people at the table, and just really started talking about everybody's different role. And I will say, as the chief of the police, it was a learning experience for me. I now understand some of the challenges that the CPS has. I now understand some of the challenges that Metro has. But I believe as long as we all stay at the table, we will be able to break down those challenges and come up with solutions, such as the busing system in our city. So we're all working on that. But what we cannot do is just be comfortable with putting more police down there as the first line of interaction with these kids. We also had Ms. Iris Rowley call out to the community, come down if you have programming, if you have the ability to talk to these kids. So that's been helpful. She's been a line between the police and the kids each day down there. And so that's making headway on our behalf as well.
We're talking about youth violence and the effort to keep our teens safe and out of trouble. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Superintendent Wright, I know really across the country we've seen chronic absenteeism since the pandemic. Does that factor into these cases, these situations that you're running into with young people?
I tell you, one of the things that the processes that we have established with the police department has done for us, it has allowed us to really get specific information about students. So, for example, as we're looking at, if there is a situation that happens downtown or happens in the area, the following day or within that, you know, within a reasonable time, the police department notifies us about who the students are. So what we have been able to do is we have been able to do some cross-referencing. Are the students chronically absent? Are they, have they had disciplinary issues in school? Did the situation happen at a time that they should have been in school and they were not there? And so we see sprinklings of some of those issues as we're looking at the students collectively. And we also recognize that all students that are downtown, or all children that are downtown, are also not CPS students. And so we're thinking through that process as well. In our district specifically, we've seen a slight improvement in chronic absenteeism. And so that's a plus, but there is a lot more that needs to happen in that space. And one of the things that we're really focused on right now is how we are able to bring the community together in a call to action around attendance. All attendance-aged children should be in school somewhere, even if they're not a CPS student. So how can we make sure that everyone in the community is doing the encouragement around students being in school and not in spaces during the day where they should not be because they should be in school?
Yeah. Chief, do you have a sense for that? Is truancy a part of the issue with all this?
Yeah, from what we're seeing, it is a part of that. You know, the schools have the data that supports what the superintendent was just discussing. At the end of the day, we as law enforcement are more concerned with the conduct than their location, whether they're in school, whether they're not in school. That's a parental problem, a community problem, but not necessarily a priority for law enforcement. Ours is more focused on the conduct of the individual kids.
Yeah, that makes sense. Superintendent Wright, you've talked about the use of restorative practices to kind of deal with some of these issues. Talk about what those are and how schools are using them to reduce conflict and violence.
So, you know, it's important to us that we are creating a safe and inclusive learning environment. And when we think about restorative practices, we're really focused on making certain that students understand what they have done. They understand the consequences for their behavior. And one of the forms of restorative practices is understanding how to repair the harm. There is something that's occurred, and you want to make sure that if there has been a challenge, you know how to correct that. More importantly, restorative practices is also proactive, because it's looking at how you're able to move to resolution before it becomes an issue. You know, as I think about what Chief said earlier, and I would concur with that, you know, 31 years as an educator, and when you look at where some of our students are, many of them have lost the ability many of them have lost the ability to peacefully disagree. And before you know it, just like the chief said, you know, one person looks at another, or that they walk by and they accidentally bump one another, and before you know it, there is something physical. So how can we go back to helping our children understand how to talk things out? Collaborative circles is another a restorative practice that's used. And we identified our schools, and we looked at schools that had some of the higher incidences of discipline, and those were the schools that are going through our restorative practices training first. And so we're finished with our first cohort, and that first cohort is already sharing that they're seeing an improvement in the students and the students' behavior because they've been able to go through that training collectively. And so it's really an area that we want to continue to focus on. It's also, we have to dispel the myth that restorative practices is devoid of consequences. That's not what it is at all. It's really helping children understand and make sense of what it is that they're doing, but understanding that there are also consequences that go along with your actions as well.
Okay. We have a caller on the line. Christy, thanks so much for your call. What is your question or comment?
Hi, thank you, Lucy. Yes, my name is Christy, and I'm a retired teacher. My teaching experience is in Indiana before I moved into the Cincinnati area. And what I am always concerned about is the parents' responsibility seems to be left out of the discussion. Through all the news stories and such, I hear about the wonderful schools doing all they can, the city doing all they can, but the key ingredient is a parent or parents. And so I'm confused as to why the parents are not held more responsible than what it seems in the press. So
okay.
That's my question.
Thanks, Christy. Who I don't know if you have thoughts on that, Superintendent Wright.
Well, you know, I do have thoughts on it, and I understand. And in many instances, and I know Chief and I have talked about this as well, we concur. I mean, it's not something that, and I don't mean to speak for the chief, but it's not something that we can control on our own. We only have so many hours that we're responsible for students. And outside of that, even when they're in our care, they have parents and caregivers that are also responsible for them. And so it limits what we can actually do when we start thinking through what needs to happen for the students.
Mm-hmm. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment, and later in the program, are bees making a comeback? This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about youth violence and the efforts to keep our teens safe and out of trouble. My guests are Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Ironetta Wright, Cincinnati Police Chief Teresa Thiege, and now we're also joined by Cincinnati Black United Front founder Iris Rowley. Thanks for being here, Iris. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Iris, earlier in the conversation, the chief was talking about the important work you've been doing, going downtown with volunteers to really talk with teens. And I know you've been talking to many young people directly about all of this. What are you hearing from them? What kind of solutions are they suggesting?
Thank you, Lucy, for having me. And hello to Superintendent Wright and to Chief Thiege, to my favorite people. Thank you for being in the studio. What I'm hearing from kids is pretty much what I believe if you listen to those people who are really engaged and concerned about what is the matter, that they too have very clear messages for the adults in the city of Cincinnati. They don't feel safe. They don't have much to do. They're worried about housing. They're worried about food security. They're worried about getting to and fro. And so those are the adult issues that children are thinking about. They're worried about helping parents pay bills. They're worried about being looked as if all of them are doing bad things. They're worried about a whole host of issues, Lucy, that I believe are really indicative of why we have these problems with kids. There are a lot of adult things that they have to worry about and endure as they are trying to grow up and figure out who they are and how to live positively in the city of Cincinnati. Yeah. So that's what they're saying, Lucy. Mm.
Based on all that, Chief Thiege, I guess I wonder, do you see the need for a different kind of policing or a different police response when teens are at the center of this violence? How are you all handling that?
Yeah, I don't think that we need a different type of police response. I think we know our role very, very well. What we need is something other than policing, and that's where Iris and her team has kind of come into play for us. To have that immediate interaction, try and help these kids come up with solutions, alternatives to just hanging out downtown. I went down there a couple of times, and it's very obvious to me. You see the kids just kind of navigating back and forth between Fountain Square and Government Square with really no goal. It's obvious that it is where they go to be seen and to see others. But we got to give them something else to do besides just roaming.
Yeah. Superintendent Wright, this came up a little bit before with Christy, our caller, but how is the district engaging parents and other family members in this work? I mean, as you said, the children are only in schools for so many hours a day. They're only in your care for so many hours a day. Talk about how you're working with parents and families, especially, I mean, a lot of parents and families have these outside stresses that Iris just talked about that weigh very heavy on kids.
Right. I think it's really around open communication, as much open communication as we can do with families. When we revised our code of conduct this year, and when we did that, one of the things that we asked that all families did was actually review the code of conduct with their child, because some of the behaviors that we're seeing in other areas, we have, you know, taken some liberties in terms of that to utilize the code of conduct to be responsive to what we're seeing. I think the other is making sure that parents are aware. Because sometimes there are things that are happening that parents just don't know about. I mean, they're working two or three jobs, many of them trying to make ends meet, and say that they don't know that their child that they think is at home is downtown doing something that they should not do. And so making sure that those lines of communication, those lines are also open. The other thing that we actually learned through COVID was how we can have more engagement, honestly, virtually. And so we've done a lot of instances where we're meeting with families. They may not be able to come into the school, but we're able to meet with them virtually so that they also know what we're seeing as well.
Mm-hmm. Chief DG, Avondale has seen some success in reducing gun violence. Do you have a sense for what's been working there and whether some of that could be replicated in other communities?
Yeah, so there are a lot of things. Avondale is in the District 4 community, so each district has their own neighborhood liaison unit, violent crime squad, investigative unit, and such. And so each district commander approaches the issues in their district from a different perspective. So the work they're doing there. We also, so I think, Lucy, it was last year or so when I was here with you and we were talking about the gun violence with the youth in our community. And it was like nothing I've ever seen in my career. So we really started focusing on the city as a whole through our Crime Gun Intelligence Center around the youth that have guns, the youth who are being shot. And I'm happy to say that is reaping benefits. You mentioned at the beginning of the program, yes, our violent crime is down. Our shootings are down roughly about 5% from this time last year. But, you know, knock on wood, our shooting activity involving the youth is down significantly, up in the 60s and 70%.
Oh, wow. That's great to hear. Yeah. Iris, what do you think all of us should be doing to address this problem? What else could we all or should we all be doing to help make this better?
I think what you're hearing, Lucy, from the two wonderful people in the studio, the superintendent and our police chief, is that it's not just the school system's problem and it's not just a police problem. This is a societal issue. And we talk about gun violence, but we leave out the people who put us in this conundrum. When the chief talked about she's not seen this in her career, we've never been a constitutional carry state either, and stand your ground with access to so many guns. And so we have to be on all planes, be dealing with societal issues that are plaguing children. I heard earlier someone talk about parents. We have a lot of children inside of our school systems that don't have parents. A lot of them are in foster care and they're coming from out of state. A lot of them have been emancipated. They're on their own. So there are a lot of things that could make this plate a platter if we don't begin to wrap our arms around all of these systems and parents and community on how we can make it better for children with options, with housing, with food, with health. I mean, our mental health of our children at this particular state, and this is one thing that COVID uncovered for us, that we realize now that the mental health status of a lot of our children is it's critical now. We're in an acute state. So we just can't rely on police. We have to rely on other systems to help us figure out what the actual problems are and to begin to design long-term sustainable solutions that will help children. That's what we should be doing, Lucy.
Yeah. Superintendent Wright, teachers and school staff are dealing with so much already. I mean, Iris just talked about mental health that was exposed during COVID, the learning loss and all the things that educators are juggling. How do you help them manage this too?
I think we recognize that, you know, as educators, we have always dealt with children that have mental health concerns and mental health issues. To Iris's earlier point, however, COVID truly exacerbated that. And so it's making certain that teachers know the resources that are available, one, at school for students. We have mental health providers that are at all of our schools. They can actually get care at the school. But also important for teachers is that they know how to take care of themselves, that they know that there's also care available for them. We have employee assistant programs that allow teachers to receive additional support to make sure that they are mentally healthy. And so I think that it's also important that we recognize in the school building that it's just like it's not, just like the teachers can't do it alone, just like the parents can't do it alone, just like the police can't do it alone. It takes all of us to make sure that we are identifying students, we are looking at what their concerns are, and we're looking at the resources that we have with them. I also think that in our community, it is important that we continue to focus on the stigma that goes along with mental health. Many of our children need mental health support, and sometimes we cannot get the access that we need for them because there is still such a stigma around that in our community.
Such an important conversation. I've been talking with Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Ironetta Wright, Cincinnati Police Chief Teresa Thiege, and Cincinnati Black United Front founder Iris Rowley. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, are bees making a comeback? We'll hear from some experts. This is Cincinnati Edition.